You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
It is the weekend, and indeed, it is another edition of Make the Call here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I am Jimmy Cuska here in the Driftless area of Wisconsin. That's Western Wisconsin. And along for the ride today, we head to the Northwoods with Gray Gunderson, who is our representative of upper management. What's up, Gray?
Good morning. Good morning. It's a good morning, hopefully for you too, Jimmy.
And in our capital city, it is Parker Vertical Olson. What's up, Parker?
Jimmy, I feel like I am required to tell you this. I was at the shareholders meeting in Green Bay. We went up on Monday, and in doing that, we also went into the Hall of Fame. And I don't know if you've been to the Packer Hall of Fame before, Jimmy, but they have the vertical test thing there. And you better believe I did it. I don't think I need to disclose my number. However, I did it.
Obvious follow-up to that is we have to know the number now, right, Gray? We have to know the number.
I don't see how you can avoid it now. Right. You made this bed, now lay in it.
As a I want to say 5'11 man, I had a 9'6", I think is what it was.
Well, that's not how you measure vertical. You measure vertical from standing.
Nobody's going off
of,
hey, don't worry about it. Hey, 9'6", Jimmy. That's all I need to know. I can jump that high.
Okay, so Parker Vertical Olson has a 9'6" vertical jump, which is not the way you measure it, but we'll go with it for the sake of the fact that it's radio and it's theater of the mind. You can do whatever you want. We are going to move along to the sports, not sports topics of the week. Later in the show, we will have Mike Clemens join us. He is in Green Bay, where Parker was at the Hall of Fame, right? But we have Mike Clemens in Green Bay covering Packers training camp, which got underway this past week with all the news and notes coming your way and a sports weekend review coming up about 40 minutes from right now. Later in the program, we're going to do a deep dive on the Brewers ahead of the trade deadline, which comes your way Monday. And we'll ask the very simple question about what they have or have not done to make themselves World Series contenders. We'll do that coming up later in the program. But through that point, we do what we like to call the top 8 at 8, and that's because the show airs 8 in the morning on many of these Civic Media radio stations. We do the 8 top sports stories or not sports stories of the week. So let's start with number 8, and this one inspired by the Brewers using a position player to pitch this week. And I have to ask you guys, what's the equivalent of that in another sport where you take somebody out of position to do something like pitch? I want to ask this question this week because it is fascinating that we see guys be doing things in professional sports that they wouldn't otherwise be doing.
Wes Welker, when players have to kick, and Wes Welker is the one who immediately comes to mind. I know there's other examples, but
Ocho Cinco.
Hey, oh, geez. I repressed that memory. But yeah, Wes Welker is who I choose to remember there.
You went the exact same route that I went, Gray. I was also thinking letting your emergency kicker just do for giggles. I can't remember. Oh, didn't Tom Brady do a drop kick one time, too?
No, Doug Flutie did. Doug Flutie was allowed by Belichick to do a drop kick, I think, in one of his final games. It was his final season. It was a farewell thing.
There you go.
I have a high school player that did a drop kick in a game. We went 0-9 that year. 0-10, actually. But he did a drop kick in our final game. And we got it. It made the Dan Patrick show, which was pretty awesome. So I took a video of it from the sideline, and he had a drop kick, and he kicked that thing. I mean, in practice, he was maybe 50%. He mostly did it to goof around. We did it in a game, and he kicked it like through good over the scoreboard, over the fence, out into the street. I mean, that thing would have been good from 100 yards. It was crazy, and it was amazing. My nomination for this is that in the NHL, they have a really odd rule where they have an emergency goaltender. So yeah. This happened like 4 or 5 years ago where they had some guy who was just like a rec league goalie who was like managing ticket sales, and he's like 40 something years old. And after the first two go down, he has to come out and be the emergency goaltender for the team that he against the team that he works for, which is crazy. So the team that pays him had to go in goal, and then he made all the saves and got the win, which is just insane to me. The guy who's just literally playing in rec leagues comes in and he plays emergency goaltender in an NHL game. That is incredible. So it just inspired me to think when you have a position player pitching, you know, like something like that could happen. It's just awesome.
I actually remember that, and I'm not the hockey guy here by any means, but I remember the story. I did some quick Googling. He was the Zamboni driver and arena operator, David Ayers, for the Hurricanes against the Maple Leafs. What a story.
Awesome.
That's so awesome. All right, we got to keep this thing moving. Number seven in our top 8 and 8. We've talked about all these fun things this summer, right? And now that it's August, we start thinking about fall. But I have to ask you, with a month to go in what most people consider summer, not meteorologically or anything like that, but just what we have realistically left, if you track summer by June, July, August, do you have anything left on your summer bucket list to get done?
I would like to get out to a couple more baseball games. I really want to go to another Brewery game or two. I don't know if I've been to one with the roof open yet. That's kind of the goal. I don't think I've been to one with the roof open yet. So there you go. Mother Nature, please help me. Have a nice day for a Brewery game I'm at.
I haven't been to one of those either this year, but I usually don't get to one in a given year because, you know, living this far away, it's a little bit of a treat to make that happen. It always involves a hotel stay, and it's a pretty up made to do thing. So
upper
for me, I got to keep
problems,
it simple.
Parker. That's what that is.
I know.
Yeah. Complain, those managers, I swear. But what I actually haven't accomplished is to go fishing yet somehow. It's a little absurd this late on. The temps have been bad for a lot of the fish in the area, so you got to be gentle on them. I got to at least get a worm on a hook, and I haven't pulled that off.
I have not gotten onto a boat yet this summer. I hate to admit it. I live in an area with a ton of rivers. I grew up on lakes, so I was always on a boat. I spent whole summers on the boat. I've slept overnight on boats. Like this summer, I have not made it onto one, and that's really weird for me. But you know, in my old age and living where I do, there aren't a whole lot of opportunities for that. Unless I want to go on the Wisconsin River and end up, you know, like 80 miles downstream somewhere, you know, in Iowa on the Mississippi River. So I have to make it onto a boat this summer. That's what's left on my summer bucket list. All right, let's talk some sports though. All right, we're like halfway through the first segment, so let's talk a little sports. The sports show after all. Number six in our top 8 and 8 is this. The Badgers and the rest of the Big Ten had their Big Ten media days for football this week. Luke Fickell got to speak, got to hear from a few of the Badgers players as well. And just wondering, do you guys have any takeaways about the Badgers? Is anything said make you feel any different about what's coming up this season?
I'm always pretty cautious when I hear what they're saying at media days, but it seemed like the pretty much a consensus among the beat writers and everything that I've seen is that this is the most confident that they think that Fickell has sounded since perhaps year one. It seems like he actually kind of feels like there might be something this time. And I do believe I was seeing some stuff on social media that Melvin Gordon was at media days as well. That tells me that the Badgers are actually like investing in using those names, those people who have been part of the program previously and actually know what the program is, which is something that Luke Fickell kind of forgot in his first year or so, forgot what Wisconsin football was. So I hate to say this, they might be roping me back in, Jimmy. They might have just got my attention for another season, for at least a little bit of the season, to watch them and go, ooh, you know, those Badgers, they might not be too bad guys.
Just when you thought you were out. Parker, real quick, they did invest in bringing alumni in as part of it. They hired Brady Ewing to be their alumni rep, you know, and he's a former Badger. He's from Richland Center. So they've got him working with some of the alums. So there you go.
That was actually the same moment of the speech that stood out most for me. I still am trying to figure out how I feel about it, but his optimism about that hire of Ewing and his optimism in general regarding in-state recruiting, when that has been absolutely hot button lately, you know, it's not like I expected him to say we need to do better still after that was the tone they took last year. But I don't know. Am I optimistic? What do you guys feel about that? Were you reassured? I don't know if I was.
Cautiously. Very cautiously. That's all I got on that.
Their schedule's easier this year. That's going to help the record. That should get them bowl eligible. Like, they should get 6 wins out of this. So they should be better just by virtue of not having a stacked schedule. Like, they don't have a month like they had last year where they're playing like a top 10 team every week. So I think just by virtue of an easier schedule, like, just the record should be better. And winning solves a lot of problems, to be honest, guys. And I know this because if we ever won a game with the high school football team I coach, it would solve every problem we have. We just need to win a game and we'll all be happy again. But that's the thing. That's what solves problems in sports. You win games, people in your fans, your players, your coaches, boosters, alumni, administration, everybody's happy. So that's all they gotta do. Just win, right?
Seattle
Davis, just win. All right, number five in our top 8 and 8. This one I threw in overnight last night because I thought, you know, I've seen all these stories this week. The WNBA had a post about two players that made kind of a joke wager on a game. It's kind of ha 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 funny, whatever. $400, who wins, whatever. And then they deleted it, and then had they put out a very lengthy statement in which no punishment was offered. And it's got people up in arms about just kind of the state of professional sports in general. And I was thinking, earlier this summer, we heard about Michael Beasley and him, you know, fixing stat products and games, like getting a certain number of rebounds or whatever. We see that there's a big fiasco in the NCAA with a quarterback who was gambling on other games and stuff like that. And I'm just wondering, with all the advertising by gambling services and like having the spread put in every like bottom line crawl in ESPN, do we need to rethink sports gambling? Do we need to, you know, because I just think that, you know, 10 years ago, all of this stuff was unthinkable. And all of a sudden today, it's so widely accepted. I'm just wondering if we need to reconsider like how we approach sports gambling, whether it's professional or college sports.
That's a really tough topic, Jimmy, but I'm glad that we've got it on the show this week because it is something that's on the minds of a lot of people. I think about it a lot. I know I generally have a pretty negative reaction to gambling in general, so I've got to keep that in mind when I think and talk about this kind of stuff. But I also, you know, and without getting political, overregulation is its own problem. So stopping things entirely, aside from being unrealistic, is going to present its own issues. So when you've got something like this, I think you've got to create a clear and concise system of addressing the issues where they pop up. But I don't know if we can paint the whole scene with the brush of the issues that do pop up. They're going to be ugly when they happen because these people who are betting on their own games, they have a lot of money or they're in positions where it's especially egregious if it happens at all. But those stories are going to get a fantastic amount of attention. And against the backdrop of a mostly honest sporting community, at least how it feels right now, I don't believe in the slippery slope quite yet. Do I think about it a lot? Am I worried? Yeah, totally. And I hope the people who struggle with gambling get the help they need. But I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily as serious as every story and the level of seriousness those stories have individually might make it seem. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it is hard because you don't even... The spotlight is always going to have a bit of gambling right around it, right? Like, if I'm watching an MLB game on ESPN, there's going to be some kind of sports gambling ad right there, which is a bad look. IMO. I think it's kind of a bad look to be coming down on players like this if you're going to actively advertise for that stuff.
I think the NFL has the right process for this. They have a very clear set of, like, you know, what you can and can't do. I believe they even have device monitoring and things like that. So you can't do things like within a venue. You can't do things with certain online sports books or whatever it is. I feel like the NFL has addressed this the most rigidly, but then I think of baseball where there's people with lifetime bans for it. So I can't say that because baseball, obviously, if they find out, they deal with it pretty severely. You know, Shohei Ohtani had the same issue. Is it translator? Is it interpreter? Was caught with some of this. So I feel like the professional leagues are, you know, I don't think it's all for show yet, but I think as, you know, this becomes more normalized, it's going to become a bigger issue. And especially where big money is involved, I feel like that's where things will kind of go, push comes to shove. Like, you know, at what point does it start financially negatively impacting professional or even college sports? That's the point where it'll probably change. We only have a minute, so I have to change the topic real quick. That's a topic I would love to spend more time on. Just real quick before the break, just curious if you guys think the Brewers have done enough to this point, and I say that with the caveat that we do this ahead of the weekend, have they done enough to this point to set themselves up for October? In 15 seconds or less each, you go.
No, they haven't really done anything very remarkable at all. They haven't done a lot that I think is going to really add a lot. And frankly, what they did, they got rid of one of the guys already. So, yeah. Gray?
The answer I was wanting to give before you just said what you said was, I hope so. I was going to ask if that was allowed, and now I'm not even willing to put that up there. I still do hope so, though. You know, it's hard not to be optimistic. I don't know. I guess I'm a believer. Jimmy, what do you feel?
I feel like we'll talk about this in about 20 minutes when we deep dive on the Brewers because we have to hit a break. This is Make the Call as part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
It is Make the Call. It is the Civic Media Radio Network. Myself, Jimmy, here with Gray and Parker. As we move along, it is time for our Packers training camp update. We've been doing previews for the past couple of weeks. We are now into training camp, so We're going to take a look at training camp this week. Our own Mike Clemens is at training camp. You're going to hear a lot about that coming up here in about a half an hour from now with a Sports Week in Review. But with us three here, we get to talk about things away from the sound bites. And so, guys, I want to start with this. Number three in our top 8-8 is this. Which position do you think is the most competitive at camp? And I know that we've covered this a little bit the past couple of weeks, offense versus defense. But now that we've gotten into camp, we've had a few days under our belt. Is there a position that really stands out to you as being extremely competitive?
Right off the bat, I think it bears mentioning that, honestly, no starting position really stands out here in general. The reshuffles that are coming were known about, the offensive line. The questions become who's number three at a couple positions, like offensive skill positions, wide receiver three, total mystery. Can Savion Williams handle that role? We touched on that last week, but we're no closer to knowing. The same thing applies to RB2. Can Chris Brooks shoulder that load? Is it too predictable to put him in and see that it's going to be a passing down, et cetera, et cetera? I know that creates useful misdirection, but for me, it's mostly backup roles on offense, excluding the line. That's about it. That's the whole list, at least for me. Parker, what do you got?
Yeah, I think you're pretty much right. This is mainly a depth question. It's not a starting question for the most part. When I was up in Green Bay on Monday, I had the opportunity to meet up with Mike Clemens, and we had a great conversation. You can watch it on civicmedia.us. But one of the things that he mentioned to us was running back is kind of one of the things that he's really watching during camp. And he mentioned Marshawn Lloyd, actually. He kind of got his eyes on Marshawn Lloyd, but Chris Brooks as well. That's something that I've got my eyes on too. I think that you're going to really be seeing those guys fight out for that RB2 slot. And who knows, we're not going to say a whole ton about this, but Josh Jacobs with his situation, who knows what he'll be like, who knows if he'll be on the team at certain points of the year. It's very possible that the Packers need to have two really good depth running backs right here.
That's exactly what I'm looking at. Half a dozen RBs on the list right now, including Jacobs, Brooks, and Lloyd. Beyond that, Martinez, Nixon, and Strong Jr. Yeah, me neither. So exactly. But that said, someone may float to the top. That's exactly what the Packers do well. UDFAs, late round drafts, and weird pickups like that. So don't be surprised if it's someone you've never heard of before looking decent. That's as much as I'll commit to.
I wanted to go off the board a little bit with defensive back. I think defensive back has a lot of intriguing positional battles. And you've already seen in camp a couple of guys who you thought maybe were borderline roster guys, and they're making big plays already in training camp in the first few days. I feel like defensive back is going to be one of those positions. The Packers seem to scramble on this every year. They find some random dude and they plug him in, and then he ends up being Sam Shields, or he ends up, you know, having a good year, right? So I feel like defensive back is going to be one of those spots where, whether it's, you know, Cisse emerging as a rookie, Brandon Cisse, their first pick this year in the NFL draft, seeing him emerge and find a spot, or it's one of the other pickups that they've had, seeing somebody emerge from there, that feels like a really competitive area of the roster. Let's move on to number two in our top 8-8. And this is because, well, there is some good news in Packerland this week. And that is that Tucker Kraft came off the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list. And with Micah Parsons never even being added to it, there is some optimism that these guys can be ready sooner rather than later. What's your take on the news of this week?
Kraft, yes. Parsons, no. I can't find a belief in me that Parsons is going to be back anywhere but on the original schedule. They actually went in and did a surgical cleanup on his knee to deal with multiple issues. So as I understand it, the Packers kind of have a pretty strict minimum timeout kind of timeline system. And when you've doubled up like that, the way that Parsons has, it sounds like he'll miss the first quarter of the season, perhaps. That's kind of what I'm seeing thrown around a lot. Four games, maybe five, if it doesn't go great. Kraft, though, off the PUP list as we speak. So fantastic. I expect to see him sooner rather than later. I don't know if I haven't seen any official word, but first 2 or 3 weeks, it sounds like. That's definitely the vibe I'm getting. Has anybody seen something more official?
Not official, but I have had the same understanding that you have, Gray. I believe that Kraft should be back fairly early in the season. Hopefully in time to have a game to warm up for that Bears game that is in, I believe that's week 5, which I believe is the target for Micah Parsons, right? And can you imagine if you get Micah Parsons' first game back this year is against Chicago? Oh, baby. But yeah, obviously those are absolutely huge for offensive defense, because we've talked about this last week, right? The wide receiver room you don't know how much depth there is necessarily there in that, like, maybe fourth spot, maybe the third slot. Tucker Kraft, he's going to add you depth there in that receiving core. So if you can get him back, the sooner the better, especially for those games that really matter, like against Chicago, that's really huge. Micah Parsons, though, I think he's probably more important, so I would want to hang on to him for a little extra long just to make sure he's 100% ready. I know I was just saying that you want him back for those really key games like against the Bears, but I would rather make sure that he's 100% ready to go if he's got to wait one extra week against Dallas, which also a meaningful game for him, but I would rather that than test it a little too early against the Bears or someone else.
The benefit of being out the pup list, that takes you up for the first 4 weeks automatically. So I think for Kraft, I think that's the optimism, is that he's back ahead of week the fifth game then at that point. That would be the benefit to it. I saw Parsons try to ride one of the little kids' bikes at training camp in a video. That was pretty hilarious. He ended up getting up and just walking the bike, which, you know, to be fair, coming off an ACL, having your knees over your head riding a bike, probably not the best of plans, but thought that was pretty cool. I think either way, both of these guys, I would say arguably the most important pieces they've got coming back this year outside of quarterback, obviously. And also for Kraft, I think with Luke Musgrave also having injury issues, I think the tight end spot really just needs that shot of optimism now. Final thoughts here in the final 30 seconds of this segment.
I am watching Bo Melton. I wonder if the Packers are going to just say, you know what? No. I feel like him trying to play two different positions is kind of like having two quarterbacks. That really means you have no quarterbacks.
Yeah, as I understand it, Melton is recommitted as a wide receiver again, having taken zero snaps at corner. That said, I'd want to double confirm, but pretty sure he's going to be on offense this year, and they'll be better for it. I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
We are going to talk some Brewers in our next segment. This is Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Halfway through this edition of Make the Call, the Civic Media Radio Network, myself, Jimmy Cusco, along with Parker Olson in Madison and Gray Gunderson in the Northwoods and Park Falls. We are moving along in our program. 20 minutes from now, Mike Clemens will give you a sports week in review. He's at training camp in Green Bay, and he'll get you all the latest and greatest on what's happening there. But right here, we are going to talk about the Brewers. And despite the sterling record, it feels like they have kind of gone back on their heels a little bit, in the sense that I don't feel like there's a lot of motivation for them to be, you know, for them from their perspective to be aggressive here near the trade deadline. I know there's rumors floating out there tied to every starting pitcher. Tarek Skubal has been mentioned a million times in my timeline. I know that there's probably talks happening. They're always exploring these things. They have a billion prospects. They've got a lot of injuries in the pitching staff right now. We had a position player pitch this week, for crying out loud. So there are some things happening in Brewerland that make me a little concerned. And I have to ask the question now, going into August, are the Brewers legitimate World Series contenders? Let's flash back to a couple weeks ago. The Brewers sent the son of Prince Fielder to Houston to get a couple of pitchers back at a time in which Jacob Mizrowski was dealing with arm soreness. Kyle Harrison was injured. They had a couple of other injuries in the bullpen. Brandon Woodruff is having surgery on his shoulder. And they put Lance McCullers, one of the players they got back in the trade, who has missed three complete years due to injury in his MLB career, former All-Star, but clearly at the tail end of his career, and didn't do very well to the point that he got DFA'd and then eventually released. So essentially the Brewers swapped a low-level, like single-A prospect for a single pitcher who I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you his name at this point. And it's on my sheet in front of me. I know his name, but somebody that's had an impact for the Brewers. And that's been kind of the move they've made to this point. The Brewers have made some offseason moves. Obviously Harrison coming in, making the deals they do to reshape the roster. I get that. A lot of their stuff happens in the offseason, but with the World Series in mind, have the Brewers done enough to get there? I'm curious, guys.
Ah, oh, man. Whenever I hear Brewers and World Series, I just kind of shrug, because I want it more than any other championship in my fandom, because it would be so meaningful being the first for the Brewers. But It's the Brewers. that's where we are. Have the Brewers done enough to get to a World Series to win a World Series? No. Not, I think they're pretty legitimate contenders to get to it, but I don't think that they can win it. They haven't particularly done anything. And Jimmy, you're right. They traded a good prospect for a couple of meh, nothing too important. And if you're willing to trade a prospect for a guy who can give you, I think it was three appearances for the McCullers, like that didn't feel worth it to me. I will say this, though, that I am I'm excited about this, but it also worries me a little. I'm excited about the fact that the Brewers seem very sure of the fact that they will get into the postseason and that they can just kind of ride the wave through the rest of this regular season. And then when they get to the postseason, they can really ramp up. I say this because they're really watching the innings for their starting rotation, right? Jacob Mizorowski, they're being very careful with him. They've messed around with the starting rotation here and there to make sure that pitchers are actually getting their rest, which is absolutely awesome because that means that they don't need to go absolutely flooring it pedal to the metal right now. That means that they are pretty confident that they're going to be getting into the postseason. So that is a good thing to me. What concerns me is that it also kind of tells me that they're coasting through. The Cubs are, I believe, 5.5 games back right now of the Brewers. And that's a sizable lead, but you get another 2 months or so of this season. I think exactly 2 months are left. That lead could disappear. And if you're on coasting mode instead of like really playing hard mode, you might run into a couple of issues. Gray, do you think... What are you reading with the tea leaves here? Are the Brewers making moves that make them legitimate contenders? Or are they just kind of, does it feel like they're coasting to you?
Well, the only thing I worry about is an overcautiousness. That could be the potential mistake. But the problem with that is, doesn't matter what sport you're playing, you can only spot overcautiousness after the decisions have panned out and the dust has settled. You know, it doesn't mean it's the wrong decision going in. You know, one of my favorite quotes, you can make no mistakes and still lose. That's not failure. It's just life. So honestly, no matter what they do, they don't stand 100% chance of any particular outcome. So I don't believe in tea leaves. I believe in hope. I believe in prayer. If you're so inclined, and if you are, please, 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 please very, very much.
I look at it this way. The Brewers got to get through the National League. The American League, none of these teams have really jumped out. I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays are your number one team in the AL right now, and their run differential, it would put them somewhere in the middle of the pack of the National League. The AL doesn't scare me. If the NL gets to the World Series, I feel like it's going to be advantage NL. But in the National League, you have to deal with the Dodgers. You have to deal with the Braves. You have to deal with the Cubs. Heck, even the Phillies, when they're feeling like playing well, are pretty tough to go as well. And, you know, and that's the part of it to me. The Brewers have already played a pretty difficult schedule this year. They have 37 wins against teams over 500. They've already done a pretty good job against the better teams that they've had to play. But I also, you know, got to think of it this way too. They are, as Parker mentioned, really managing, they are really managing their pitching staff with the postseason in mind. Kyle Harrison's pitching; he pitched in Wisconsin Rapids on Thursday night. You know, they're getting guys back and kind of setting up that postseason a bit once they get into September. We don't have that big roster call up that we used to have, where you have like 40 dudes, you have like random dudes in the dugout. Like, who is this guy? They have bringing their whole active roster out to games like that. They don't do that. They have a set number of players that they have. Now for that, and that's how they roll. So I feel like the management strategy by the Brewers has always been pretty aggressive on the pitching front. It seems like they are more than content to burn options and just cycle guys through AAA, and the Brewers, or even cycle them to Single-A, let them go pitch and you know pitch for the Timber Rattlers, and come back. You know, I said Wisconsin Rapids earlier. I'm sorry, they play in Grand Chute. That's my bad. Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. We would broadcast Wisconsin Rapids Raptors on one of our stations here on WFHR WIRI. So that's my bad. I'm misspeaking there. But back to the point, they do seem to be managing themselves for that. And you know, when you look at just the available players and the cost of available players, the Minnesota Twins had to deal two prospects for a random Mets reliever. Are the Brewers willing to pay, you know, that kind of price where they got to give up out of their top ranked farm system two guys just to pick up some mid-end guy for their bullpen. I know that they've already got kind of a super bullpen going behind Ashby and all the other guys, but you know, the cost of doing business, you know, this close to the trade deadline too, also something to consider. Although that being said, the Brewers do have a lot to offer any team that wants it.
That's what I was going to say is the Brewers have a lot of, they have a lot of prospect wealth. They don't have a lot of money wealth. They have a lot of prospect wealth. I don't know. And this isn't, Mark, Matt, you can put this into cold takes exposed later on. I don't expect Luis Lara to be traded, but if they were to trade Luis Lara, he's worth like a player and a half for how good of a prospect he is, right? Like that's, he's got more power in a trade than somebody else. So I don't think that you would necessarily need to see the Brewers putting together a package that would have a bunch of prospects necessarily. Unless it's for someone big, as we talk right now.
Like Scooble, yeah. Yes. We're talking Scoobles and a cost. Four prospects, yes. And then that's a lot.
Yes, as we talk right now, nothing really has happened. However, if potentially by the time that you're listening to this show, maybe the Brewers have Scooble on their roster, and they did just like four guys go. I don't expect that to happen, especially since I think that the Brewers are more of a long-term kind of a team and not so.
You're not trying to manifest this, Parker? Hey, this is like the one chance where we get to, you know, be the time travelers here. We do this on Friday, obviously, ahead of the weekend. Things could change by the time the show airs, but we're not manifesting a Scooble trade. Is that what we're not doing here? I just want to make it clear.
I would rather not, I think. I don't.
let's commit, shall we, if I may. Do either of you truly believe in a world where the Brewers move the necessary capital to end up with Tarik Scooble in Milwaukee this season? Jimmy, go ahead.
I think the Brewers, if they're going to make a move, here's the thing. I think they do go for a top-end arm. I just don't think it's going to be a starting pitcher. I think they're going to go find a bullpen guy. That's my take on it. I think if they're going to move anything, it's going to be maybe two and a half good prospects, and they'll find themselves a top-end reliever, someone that can give them innings this year in a postseason push and then help them next year too.
I am currently researching. Hang on one second. That is
our show prep in progress, yes. Folks. If you're listening, okay. That's how we prep.
So this is why. I have now made the connection here, my friends. Tarik Scooble, I am comparing this to CC Sabathia. Okay. I wanted to check what was in the Sabathia trade. The Brewers traded away Matt Laporta, Zach Johnson, Rob Bryson, and Michael Brantley, I believe, is everyone that was involved in that trade. That is what Google AI is telling me, if you choose to believe in AI. One of these guys is put down as a future all-star, and the rest have no accolades next to their name in this immediate, really quick research. Was that worth it, Jimmy? Was CC Sabathia worth it? Because as far as I understand, this was 2008. Sorry, guys. I was not old enough to remember this. Sorry.
I'm going to yell at you for the first time ever on this show, just so you know.
What, Jimmy, that was worth it, right? Like, if you talk to somebody about the Brewers and getting to the postseason, everyone will say CC Sabathia was the greatest player on earth for 2 months, right?
Well, you know, when you pitch, you know, a million complete games, it's actually on his Hall of Fame plaque.
Yeah.
The fact that he got the Brewers to the postseason, it is extremely notable. It's one of the only times, though, I feel like a trade deadline trade for a rental has ever actually worked in the favor of the team making the trade. I feel like a lot of times when you make these trades, you have a world of expectations. Somehow Sabathia exceeded that. A Cy Young guy who exceeded the expectation. That never happens. I don't know if that was lightning in a bottle, what happened there, but that Sabathia trade, absolutely, 100%. Worth it. But that's one in a mountain of trades that have not worked. And that's my fear in this, is that if you get a guy like Scooble, who's had some injury issues himself, by the way, and you trade the farm and you bring him in for half a season or a season and a half or whatever it is, I feel like then, I don't know if lightning can strike twice in that aspect. These trade deadline things, especially with pitching, man, you got to be absolutely locked in sure. And that's why I feel like they're going to go for a less expensive, maybe a higher leverage type of guy in a relief situation, whether it's somebody who can get you a closing type deal, or maybe it's two or three innings after a starter can't get through a tough patch, whatever it is. I just feel like if they're going to make a move with anything, it's going to be someone in the bullpen. That's me, though.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I think that is probably the most likely thing that they do, and I will remain in the camp that they need a bat. The problem in the postseason for the last number of years has been they've not had a power hitter that they could rely on. And
bats
their
are also really, really expensive right now. So
I know.
But I just, that's... like, there was a guy, one of the guys that there were some, I can't even tell you the name, but they've had like two guys now, a couple of these guys that they were seeing at the trade deadline, and they're out because of injuries. And it's like, oh, the trade deadline's gone now. So it's really expensive to find bats, especially when teams like the Twins, the Minnesota Twins, they're buying at the deadline. That means there's probably like two sellers left in all of baseball right now. And that's what the expanded postseason has brought us. And that's why we're at where we're at. We are running short on time in this segment. As of recording the show, the Brewers have not made any significant move. So by the time you listen to this, if they've made a move over the weekend, our past selves would all like to say, awesome job if they do. And if they don't, well, we just spent a segment talking about maybe what they could have done. So there you go. We're going to hedge all of our bets right there. Next segment, we are going to wrap up with some of our final thoughts, and we're going to hear from Mike Clemens, our Sports Week in Review from training camp in Green Bay. That comes your way next here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Mike Clemens standing by with a Sports Week in Review. But before we hear from him here on Make the Call, we would like to have our final thoughts segment and get in something in that we didn't talk about during the program today. And we are going to skip upper management going first in this one. We're going to go Parker first this time.
Oh.
Parker, vertical Olsen with his 9'6" vertical. What you got for us?
I jumped right over him, Jimmy. Jumped right over upper management.
9'6" means you're jumping just a few inches short of the basketball rim on a standard basketball hoop.
He just keeps going up.
You think I can't dunk? Come on now, Jimmy.
You're dunking you with dunk your with ankles your at that point. A 9'6" vertical. Yeah. You're measuring it completely wrong. No, anyway, all right.
No,
I'm done.
No,
I'm done.
No, that's my thought. No.
That's how we're ending the show, everybody.
Bang.
9'6" verticals
done
for everybody.
No, I was just going to say, I'm getting excited. In Wisconsin, we are very fortunate to have the situation where there is a lot of very good Division III football, and we're getting close to kickoff. Jimmy, you know this as the broadcaster for UW-Platteville. We're getting very close to kickoff, and I've been starting to see some stuff about how good this conference is. It's the best in the country by a long shot, and I'm just... my nose, it's tingling, Jimmy. I can smell the football in the air, and it's getting me very excited to go back to D3 football.
Well, I just
football.
Put half the WIUC in the top 15 of a D3football.com top 25 poll. So, I'm expecting the WIUC to be okay this year as well. All right, Gray, what you got? Any 9'6" vertical stories for us? Or?
Well, I've got something. 9'6" minus 5'11" is 43 inches. Now, if I hold my hand like this,
oh, no.
We then subtract this.
Oh, no.
This distance right here. So that's what, 15 inches? 43 minus, you have a 28-inch vertical, my friend. I don't know how that stacks up, but it sounds kind of small. I don't know. The only thing I can measure against is combine vertical. So at the NFL combine, you'd look like a guy. That's
hey,
what I
oh
got.
Boy. Hey, see?
You got to have something if you're 5'11", I guess.
This is why I wasn't going
to
share.
Somebody who's not quite
We're not even going to talk about me, man. I would. Are negative numbers allowed? I'd find a way.
A sheet of paper is about my vertical. We have to get out of the way. Mike Clemens is standing by with a Sports Week in Review on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
A West Coast trip for the crew. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with This Week in Wisconsin Sports. Baseball, the Brewers in Anaheim this weekend for a series against the Angels. The week got off to a bumpy start with the Brewers losing to the Giants in San Francisco, shutout 4-0. The Brewers looked flat that night. It's because after beating the Rockies in Milwaukee Sunday afternoon, they sat on the team charter plane for 5 hours Sunday night in Milwaukee due to a delay and didn't arrive in San Francisco until early Monday morning. They won game two, but then got clobbered 16-3, losing the series to the Giants 2-1. Jake Bowers thought he'd fractured his big toe after hitting a foul ball off his right foot.
So I guess I fell the ball off it, couldn't really move, so came out of the game, got an x-ray, showed a fracture line. At the time, they weren't sure if it was old or new. Got an MRI. MRI and a CT scan this morning, and the doctors came back and said that it was probably old and was already there.
On Friday night, Bowers did just fine. Top of the fifth, two men on against the Angels.
Two on, one away, and that ball is hammered all the way back into right and gone for Bowers. Number 19, slider down and in, and Bowers hit that thing to Huntington Beach.
The Brewers went on to win that one 6-2 over the Angels, thanks to another great pitching performance by Shane Drouin, manager Pat Murphy.
He was fantastic. He was in control. This is a tough lineup for him to navigate with all the righties. He did a great job, and this kid has been, I don't know how many in a row, but this is probably six or seven in a row that he's been in the sixth. And in the month of July, there's no bigger part of our team than Shane.
Now, baseball fans, continue to watch for any trade news. The deadline coming up Monday at 5 p.m. Central Time. College football, it was Big Ten Media Day in Chicago this week. Luke Fickell has been the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers football team for the past 3 years. Could year number four be his last?
I'll be honest, our guys feel those things as well. They see, they feel, they hear. And so that's a growth. That's why we've talked about some of the changes that we've had to make about how we go about the season. We've taken a deep, hard look at how we train, and we've had to adjust a little bit.
NFL, the Green Bay Packers training camp began this week with the shareholders meeting. CEO and President Ed Policy telling fans on Monday that while the team finances are fine for now, some changes in laws and other factors has him concerned for the future.
In the long term, I feel good, but I do think that there are some trends we're recognizing in the NFL, and we talked about some of those, that I think can pose a threat to our long-term financial health.
Packers tight end Tucker Kraft arrived at camp with still no new contract extension for him to sign, and was asked how he felt about that.
Well, I think the best chance for Green Bay to win a Lombardi is with me on the field as well.
Kraft will now be able to participate in practice after being taken off the PUP, physically unable to perform list, just 9 months after suffering a torn ACL in his right knee. The Packers' other tight end, Luke Musgrave, though, continues to be out due to an injury in his fourth year with the team. General Manager Brian Gutekunst.
Yeah, big year for him, and we're working through it to see if it's going to be something long-term or not. We've always around here with head, necks, and hearts. It's a little bit more sensitive than some of the other injuries, right? You got to take that a little bit slower and make sure that what you know is what you know. This is a neck injury, so we'll take our time and make sure we know what we know before we put it at any kind of risk.
In 2024, the Packers used a third-round pick in the draft to select USC running back Marshawn Lloyd, but he's had a number of injuries, including at the end of his rookie year, an appendectomy. I asked Lloyd if he realized that they've been waiting 2 years for him to be the backup running back to Josh Jacobs.
Honestly, I do know that, you know, I can be a good, you know, help to the team, and I know what I'm able to do and how they what they think of me. I think I can really do something really special. So I'm excited. As far as like the RB2 and, you know, what position, like, I'm not really thinking about where I'm going to be at, but I just know that I'm going to be on the field somehow, and wherever they want me to be, if it's anywhere, I'm ready to go.
The Packers wrapped up their first week of training camp practice in helmets and shorts. On Monday, they put on the pads. I asked Jordan Love, as he heads into his seventh NFL season, what he hopes to accomplish before the season opener during these practices.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always goals you have as a player, and then I think as a team, it's just every day is a new install.
Do these receivers come to you with questions, or do you have to get after them?
I think as a receiver, you want to be on the same page with the quarterback. You want to get the ball as much as possible, so anytime there might be, you know, we might be seeing stuff different. You know, we're talking right after the play, like, hey, this is what I saw right here. This is kind of what I want you to do. Make sure we're on the same page, and that's how it's supposed to be.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love. With This Week in Wisconsin Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.